dropped in. Flames licked the ceiling and blocked the door. 25. An entire aisle is already engulfed.
The back door, Seven says, choked up. The back door!
Chris and Devante follow us down the narrow hall near Daddy's office. It leads to the restroom and the back door where deliveries are unloaded. Smoke's already filling the hall. Seven pushes the door. It doesn't budge. He and Chris ram their shoulders against it, but it's bulletproof, shoulder-proof, everything-proof. The burglar bars won't let us out anyway.
Star, my keys, Seven croaks.
I shake my head. I gave them to Goon, and the last time I saw them, he left them in the front door. Devante coughs. It's getting harder to breathe with all the smoke.
Man, we can't die up in here. I don't want to die.
Shut up, Chris says. We're not going to die. I cough into the crook of my arm. Daddy may have a spare, I say, and my voice is thin. In his office. We rush back down the hall, but the office door is locked too.
Fuck!
Seven screams. Mr. Lewis limps into the middle of the street. He grips a baseball bat in each hand. He glances around like he's trying to figure out where the smoke is coming from. With the boards on the windows, he can't see the inferno in the store unless he looks through the front door.
Mr. Lewis!
I scream as loud as I can. The guys join in. The smoke strangles our voices. The flames dance feet away, but I swear it's like I'm standing in them. Mr. Lewis limps toward the store, squinting his eyes. They widen as he looks in through the door, straight at us, on the other side of the flames.
Oh, Lord!
He limps into the street faster than I've ever seen him move.
Help! These kids stuck up in here! Help!
There's a loud crackling to our right. The fire takes out another shelf. Mr. Rubin's nephew, Tim, runs over and opens the front door, but the flames are too much.
Go to the back door, he calls to us.
Tim almost beats us getting there. He yanks hard on the door and the glass rattles. The way he's pulling, the door will come off, eventually. We don't have eventually time, though. Tires screech outside. Moments later, Daddy runs up to the back door.
Watch out,
he tells Tim, moving him out the way. Daddy fumbles for his keys and sticks several in the lock while muttering, please, God, please. I can barely see Seven, Chris, or Devante for all the smoke, and they're coughing and wheezing next to me. A click. The knob turns. The door flies open. We rush out. Fresh air fills my lungs. Daddy pulls me and Seven through the alley around the corner and across the street to Reuben's. Tim gets Devante and Chris. They make us sit on the sidewalk. Tires screech again and Mama goes, Oh my God! She runs over, Uncle Carlos on her heels. She holds my shoulders and helps me lie on the sidewalk.
Breathe, baby, she says. Breathe.
But I have to see. I sit up. Daddy attempts to run into the store for God knows what. The flames swat him back. Tim rushes a bucket of water from his uncle's restaurant. He runs into our store and douses it on the flames, but he's forced to jump back too. People trickle onto the street, and more buckets of sloshing water are hauled into the store. Ms. Yvette carries one from her beauty shop. Tim tosses it onto the fire. Flames eat away at the roof, and smoke billows from the windows of the barbershop next door.
My shop!
Mr. Lewis cries. Mr. Rubin stops him from running toward it.
My shop!
Daddy stands in the middle of the street, breathing hard, looking helpless. A crowd has gathered, and people watch with their hands pressed to their mouths. Bass rattles nearby. Daddy slowly turns his head. The gray BMW is parked in the intersection near the liquor store. King leans up against it. Some other king lords stand alongside him and sit on the hood of the car. They laugh and point. King stares straight at Daddy and takes out his cigarette lighter. He sparks a flame. Aisha said King was gonna fuck us up because I dry snitched. That meant my whole family. This is it.
You son of a bitch!
Daddy marches toward King, and King's boys advance toward Daddy. Uncle Carlos stops him. The King Lords reach for their pieces and tell Daddy to bring it. King laughs like it's a comedy show.
You think this shit funny? Daddy yells. Punk ass! Always hiding behind your boys!
King stops laughing.
Yeah, I said it! I ain't scared of you! You ain't shit to be scared of! Trying to burn up some kids, you fucking coward!
Mama starts for King, and Uncle Carlos has to work overtime to hold her back, too.
He burned Maverick's store down!
Mr. Lewis announces to everybody, in case we didn't hear.
King burned Maverick's store down!
It bubbles around the crowd, and narrowed eyes set on King. Of course, that's when the cops and the fire truck decide to show up. Of course, because that's how it works in Garden Heights. Uncle Carlos convinces my parents to back away. King lifts his cigar to his lips, eyes gleaming. I want to get one of Mr. Lewis's baseball bats and knock him upside his head. The firefighters get to work. The cops order the crowd to back up. King and his boys are really amused now. Shit, it's like the cops are helping them out.
You need to be getting them, Mr. Lewis says. They the ones who started the fire. That old man don't know what he talking about, King says. All this smoke done got to him.
Mr. Lewis starts to charge at King, and an officer has to hold him back.
I ain't crazy. You did start it. Everybody know it.
King's face twitches.
You better watch yourself. Lying on folks.
Daddy glances back at me, and there's this expression on his face that I've never seen before. He turns around to the cop who's holding Mr. Lewis and says,
He ain't lying. King did start it, officer.
Holy shit. Daddy snitched.
It's my store, he says. I know he started the fire. Did you see him do it?
The cop asks. No, that's the problem. We know King did it, but if nobody saw it...
I saw him, Mr. Rubin says. He did it. I saw him too,
Tim says.
So did I,
Ms. Yvette adds. And shit, now the crowd is echoing the same thing, pointing at King and his boys. I mean, everybody's snitching. The rules no fucking longer apply. King reaches for his car door, but some of the officers draw their guns and order him and his boys to the ground. An ambulance arrives. Mama tells them about our smoke inhalation. I snitch and tell them about Devante, although his black eye makes it obvious he needs help. They let the four of us sit on the curb, and they put oxygen masks on us. I thought I wasn't that bad anymore, but I forgot how nice clean air is. I've been breathing in smoke since I got to Garden Heights. They look at Devante's side. It's purple looking, and they tell him he'll need to go in for x-rays. He doesn't want to go in the ambulance, and Mama assures the paramedics that she'll take him in herself. I rest my head on Chris's shoulder as we hold hands, oxygen masks on both of us. I'm not gonna lie and say tonight was better because he was here. Frankly, this has been one fucked up night. Nothing could make it better. But it doesn't hurt that we went through it together. My parents come our way. Daddy's lips thin, and he mumbles something to Mama. She elbows him and says, Be nice. She sits between Chris and Seven. Daddy hovers over me and Chris at first, as if he's expecting us to make room for him. Maverick, Mama says.
I.
He sits on the other side of me. We watch the firefighters put out the flames. No point, though. They're only saving a shell of the store. Daddy sighs, rubbing his bald head.
Damn, man.
My heart aches. We're losing a family member for real. I've spent most of my life in that store. I move my head off Chris and rest it on Daddy's shoulder. He puts his arm around me and kisses my hair. I don't miss that smug look that crosses his face. Petty.
Wait a minute.
He pulls away.
Where the hell y'all been?
That's what I want to know, Mama says, acting like you can't answer my texts or calls. Really? Seven and I almost died in a fire. And they're mad 'cause we didn't call them? I lift my mask and say, long night. Oh, I'm sure it was, Mama says. We got ourselves a little radical Maverick. All on the news, throwing tear gas at the cops. After they threw it at us, I point out.
What?
Daddy says, but in that impressed way. Mama cuts him a side eye and he says in a more stern tone,
I mean, what? What you do that for?
I was mad. I fold my arms onto my knees and stare at my Tims through the gap. That decision wasn't right. Daddy puts his arm around me again and rests his head against mine. A daddy snuggle.
Nah, he says. It wasn't.
Hey, Mama beckons me to look at her. The decision may not have been right, but it's not your fault. Remember what I said? Sometimes things will go wrong, but the key is to keep doing right. My eyes drift to my Tims again. Khalil still deserved better than that.
Yeah.
Her voice thickens.
He did.
Daddy looks past me at my boyfriend.
So, plain-ass Chris.
Seven snorts, Devante snickers, Mama goes, Maverick, as I say, Daddy.
At least it's not white boy, Chris says.
Exactly, Daddy says. It's a step up. You gotta earn my tolerance in increments if you gonna date my daughter.
Lord, Mama rolls her eyes. Chris, baby, you've been out here all night? The way she says it, I can't help but laugh. She's basically asking him, you do realize you're in the hood, right?
Yes, ma'am, Chris says. All night.
Daddy grunts.
Maybe you do got some balls then.
My mouth drops and Mama says, Maverick Carter. Seven and Devante crack up. But Chris says,
yes, sir, I'd like to think I do. Damn, says Seven.
He reaches to give Chris dap, but Daddy cuts him a hard eye, and he pulls his hand back.
Aight, plain-ass Chris, Daddy says, boxing gym, next Saturday, you and me.
Chris lifts his oxygen mask so fast.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said, calm down, I'm not gonna fight you, Daddy says, we gonna train, get to know each other. You've been seeing my daughter for a minute now. I gotta know you, and you can learn a lot about a man at a boxing gym.
Oh. Chris's shoulders relax.
Okay.
He puts the oxygen mask back on. Daddy grins. It's a little too mischievous for my liking. He's gonna kill my poor boyfriend. The cops load King and his boys into patrol cars, and the crowd claps and cheers. Finally, something to celebrate tonight. Uncle Carlo strolls over. He's got on a wife beater and shorts, which is so not Uncle Carlo's. Yet something about him still looks detective-y. He's been in cop mode since his colleagues arrived. Uncle Carlos gives this old man grunt as he lowers himself onto the sidewalk next to Devante. He grabs the back of Devante's neck, the same way Daddy grabs Seven's. Man hugs, I call them.
I'm glad you're safe, kid, he says. Even if you do look like a truck ran over you twice. You not mad I left without telling y'all? Of course I'm mad. I'm actually pissed. But I'm happier that you're safe. Now my mom and Pam, that's a whole different story. I can't save you from their wrath.
Are you putting me out?
No. You're grounded. Probably for the rest of your life, but that's only because we love you.
Devante cracks a smile. Uncle Carlos pats his knees.
So, thanks to all these witnesses, we should get King for arson.
Oh, for real? Daddy says.
Yep. It's a start, but not really enough. He'll be out by the end of the week.
And back to the same old shit. With targets this time.
If y'all knew where King's stash was, Devante says, would that help?
Uncle Carlos says,
probably, yeah. If somebody agreed to rat on him, would that help?
Uncle Carlos turns completely toward him.
Are you saying you want to turn witness? I mean,
Devante pauses.
Will it help Kenya, her mama, and her sister? If King went to jail, says Seven, yeah, a lot. It'll help the whole neighborhood, honestly,
Daddy says.
And I'll be protected? Devante asks Uncle Carlos. Absolutely, I promise.
And Uncle Carlos always keeps his promises, I say. Devante nods for a moment.
Then I guess I will turn witness.
Holy shit, again. You sure about that? I ask.
Yeah. After seeing you face those cops the way you did, I don't know, man. That did something to me, he says. And that lady said our voices are weapons. I should use mine, right? So you're willing to become a snitch, Chris says. On King,
Seven adds. Devante shrugs.
I already need the stitches. Might as well snitch.
26. It's around 11 the next morning, and I'm still in bed. After the longest night ever, I had to seriously get reacquainted with my pillow. My mom flicks on the lights in my new room. Good Lord, there's too many lights in here. Star, your partner in crime is on the phone, she says. Who? I mumble. Your protest partner in crime. Mama told me she saw her hand you that bullhorn on TV, putting you in danger like that. But she didn't mean to put me in, oh, I've dealt with her already, don't worry. Here. She wants to apologize to you. Miss Ofra does apologize for putting me in a bad situation, and for the way things turned out with Khalil. But she says she's proud of me. She also says she thinks I have a future in activism. Mama leaves with the phone, and I turn onto my side. Tupac stares back at me from a poster, a smirk on his face. The Thug Life tattoo on his stomach looks bolder than the rest of the photo. It was the first thing I put in my new room. Kinda like bringing Khalil with me. He said Thug Life stood for, the hate you give little infants fucks everybody. We did all that stuff last night because we were pissed. And it fucked all of us. Now we have to somehow unfuck everybody. I sit up and grab my phone off my nightstand. There are texts from Maya, who saw me on the news and thinks I'm dope personified, and texts from Chris, his parents grounded him, but he says it was so worth it, it really was. There's another text from Haley, of all people. Two simple words. I'm sorry. Not what I expected. Not that I expected to get anything from her. Not that I even want to deal with her. This is the first time she's spoken to me since our fight. I'm not complaining. She's been non-existent to me, too. I respond anyway. Sorry for what? I'm not being petty. Petty would be saying, new number, who dis? There's a damn near endless list of things she could be apologizing for. About the decision, she says. And that you're upset with me. Haven't been myself lately. Just want everything to be how it used to be. The sympathy for the case is nice, but she's sorry I'm upset? That's not the same as apologizing for her actions or the garbage she said. She's sorry I reacted the way I did. Oddly enough, I needed to know that. You see, it's like my mom said, if the good outweighs the bad, I should keep Haley as a friend. There's a shit ton of bad now, an overload of bad. I hate to admit that a teeny tiny part of me hoped Haley would see how wrong she was. But she hasn't. She may not ever see that. And you know what? That's fine. Okay. Maybe not fine, because it makes her a shitty-ass person. But I don't have to wait around for her to change. I can let go. I reply. Things will never be the way they used to be. I hit send, wait for the text to go through, and delete the conversation. I delete Haley's number from my phone, too. I stretch and yawn as I creep down the hall. The layout of our new house is way different than our old one, but I think I can get used to it. Daddy clips some roses at the kitchen counter. Next to him, Sakani inhales a sandwich, and Brix stands on his hind legs with his paws on Sakani's lap. He watches the sandwich the same way he watches a squirrel. Mama flips switches on the wall. One causes a grinding noise in the sink, and another turns the lights off and on. Too many switches, she mumbles, and notices me. Oh, look, Maverick. It's our little revolutionary. Brick scuttles over to me and jumps up my legs, tongue wagging. Morning, I tell him, and scratch behind his ears. He gets down and returns to Sakani and the sandwich.
Do me a favor, Star, Seven says, searching through a box that has kitchen stuff written on it in my handwriting. Next time, be more specific about what type of kitchen stuff is in the box. I've gone through three trying to find plates.
I climb onto a stool at the counter. Lazy butt, isn't that what paper towels are for? Seven narrows his eyes.
Hey, Pops, guess where I picked Star up from yesterday?
The plates are in the bottom of that box, I say.
Thought so.
My middle finger wants to extend so bad. Daddy says,
you bet not have been at that boy's house. I know that.
I force a smile. No, of course not. I'm gonna kill Seven. Daddy sucks his teeth.
Uh-huh.
He goes back to work on his roses. An entire bush lies on the counter. The roses are dry, and some of the petals have fallen off. Daddy sets the bush in a clay pot and pours dirt over the roots. Will they be all right? I ask.
Yeah. A little damaged, but alive. I'm gonna try something different with them. Putting them in new soil can be like hitting a reset button.
Star, Sakani says, mouth full of wet bread and meat. Nasty. You're in the newspaper. Stop talking with your mouth full, boy, Mama scolds. Daddy nods toward the newspaper on the counter.
Yeah, check it out, little Black Panther.
I'm on the front page. The photographer caught me mid-throw. The can of tear gas smokes in my hand. The headline reads, The Witness Fights Back. Mama rests her chin on my shoulder. They've discussed you on every news show this morning. Your nana calls every 5 minutes, telling us a new channel to watch. She kisses my cheek. I know you better not scare me like that again. I won't. What are they saying on the news?
They calling you brave, Daddy says. But you know, that one network got a complaint saying you put them cops in danger.
I didn't have a problem with those cops. I had a problem with that tear gas can, and they threw it first.
I know, baby. Don't even stress it. That whole network can kiss my...
Dollar Daddy! Sakani grins up at him.
Roses. They can kiss my roses.
He smudges dirt on Sakani's nose.
You ain't getting another dollar out of me.
He knows, Seven says, glaring at Sakani. Sakani gets guilty puppy dog eyes that could give bricks some competition. Mama moves her chin off my shoulder.
Okay, what's that about?
Nothing. I told Sakani we gotta be careful with money now.
He said we might have to go back to Garden Heights, too, Sakani rats. Do we?
No, of course not, Mama says. Guys, we'll make this work.
Exactly, Daddy says. If I have to sell oranges on the side of the street like the Nation Brothers, we'll make it.
Is it okay to leave, though? I ask. I mean, the neighborhood is messed up. What are people going to think about us leaving instead of helping fix it?
Never, ever thought I'd say something like that. But last night has me thinking about all of this so differently. About me differently. About Garden Heights differently.
We can still help fix it, Daddy says.
Right. I'm going to do extra shifts at the clinic, Mama says.
And I'm going to figure something out to do about the store till I get it renovated, says Daddy. We ain't got to live there to change things, baby. We just got to give a damn, aight?
All right. Mama kisses my cheek and runs a hand over my hair. Look at you. Community-minded all of a sudden. Maverick, what time did the claims agent say he was coming? Daddy closes his eyes and pinches the space between them.
In a couple of hours. I don't even want to see it.
It's okay, Daddy, Sakani says, with a mouthful of sandwich. You don't have to go by yourself. We'll go with you. So we do. Two police cars block off the entrance to Garden Heights. Daddy shows them his ID and explains why we need to go in. I'm able to breathe during the whole exchange, and they let us through.
Damn. I see why they aren't letting people in, though. Smoke has taken up permanent residence, and glass and all kinds of trash litter the streets. We pass so many blackened frames of what used to be businesses. The store is the hardest to see. The burned roof folds into itself like the slightest wind will knock it over. The bricks and burglar bars protect charred rubble. Mr. Lewis sweeps the sidewalk in front of his shop. It's not as bad off as the store, but a broom and a dustpan won't make it better. Daddy parks in front of the store and we get out. Mama rubs and squeezes Daddy's shoulder.
Star, Sakani whispers and looks back at me. The store. His eyes have tears in them, and then mine do too. I drape my arms over his shoulders and hug him to me. I know, man. A loud creaking sound approaches, and somebody whistles a tune. 40-ounce pushes his shopping cart down the sidewalk. As hot as it is, he's wearing his camouflage coat. He comes to an abrupt stop in front of the store like he just noticed it.
God damn, Maverick,
he says in that fast 40-ounce way, where it all sounds like one word.
What the hell happened? Man, where were you last night? Daddy says. My store got burned up. I went on the other side of the freeway. Couldn't stay here. Oh, no, I knew these fools would go crazy. You got insurance? I hope you do. I got insurance.
What for? I ask. Because seriously.
My life,
he says, like it's obvious.
You gonna rebuild, Maverick? I don't know, man. I gotta think about it.
You have to, 'cause now we won't have no store. Everybody else gonna leave and never come back.
I'll think about it.
Okay. If you need anything, let me know.
And he pushes his cart down the sidewalk, but comes to an abrupt stop again.
The liquor store gone too? Oh no!
I snicker. Only 40 ounce. Mr. Lewis limps over with his broom.
That fool got a point. Folks will need a store around here. Everybody else gonna leave.
I know, Daddy says. It's a lot, Mr. Lewis.
I know it is, but you can handle it. I told Clarence what happened.
He says of Mr. Wyatt, his friend who used to own the store.
He thinks you ought to stick around. And we were talking, and I think it's about time for me to do like him. Sit on a beach and watch some pretty women.
You closing the shop? Seven asks.
Who's gonna cut my hair? Sakani adds. Mr. Lewis looks down at him.
Not my problem. Since you're gonna be the only store around here, Maverick, you'll need more space when you rebuild. I want to give you the shop.
What? Mama sputters.
Whoa, now wait a minute, Mr. Lewis,
Daddy says.
Wait, nothing, I got insurance, and I'm gonna get more than enough from that. Ain't nothing I can do with a burned-up shop. You can build a nice store, give folks something to be proud to shop in. All I ask is that you put up some pictures of Dr. Kang alongside your Newey, whoever he was.
Daddy chuckles.
Huey Newton.
Yeah, him. I know y'all moving, and I'm glad. But the neighborhood still needs more men like you, even if you just run in a store.
The insurance man arrives a little later, and Daddy gives him a tour of what's left. Mama gets some gloves and garbage bags from the truck, passes them to me and my brothers, and tells us to get to work. It's kind of hard with people driving by and honking their horns. They yell out stuff like, "Keep y'all heads up," or "We got your back." Some of them come and help out, like Mrs. Rooks and Tim. Mr. Reuben brings us ice-cold bottles of water, 'cause this sun ain't no joke. I sit on the curb, sweating, tired, and 100% ready to be done. We aren't anywhere near finished. A shadow casts over me and somebody says, "Hey." I shield my eyes as I look up. Kenya's wearing an oversized t-shirt and some basketball shorts. They look like Sevens. "Hey." She sits next to me and pulls her knees up to her chest. "I saw you on TV," she says. "I told you to speak out, but damn, Star, you took it kind of far." "It got people talking, though, didn't it?"
"Yeah.
Sorry about the store. I heard my daddy did it."
"He did. No point in denying it, shoot. How's your mama?"
Kenya pulls her knees closer. "He beat her. She ended up in the hospital. They kept her overnight. She got a concussion and a whole bunch of other stuff. But she'll be okay. We saw her a little while ago. The cops came. And we had to leave."
"Really?"
"Yeah. They raided our house earlier and wanted to ask her some questions. Me and Lyric gotta stay with Grandma right now."
Devante struck already.
"You okay with that?"
"I'm relieved, actually."
"Messed up, huh?"
"Nah, not really."
She scratches one of her cornrows, which somehow makes all of them move in the same back-and-forth motion. "I'm sorry for calling Seven my brother and not our brother."
"Oh, I kind of forgot about that. It seems minor after everything that's happened. It's all right.
I guess I called him my brother 'cause it made me feel like he really was my brother, you know?"
"He is your brother, Kenya. I honestly get jealous of how much he wants to be with you and Lyric."
"Because he thinks he has to be," she says. "He wants to be with y'all. I mean, I get why. He and Daddy don't get along. But I wish he wanted to be my brother sometimes and didn't feel like he had to be.
He ashamed of us. Because of our mama and my daddy. No, he's not.
Yeah, he is.
You ashamed of me, too.
I've never said that.
You didn't have to, Star, she says. You never invited me to hang out with you and them girls. They were never at your house when I was. Like you ain't want them to know I was your friend, too. You were ashamed of me. Khalil, even the gardener, and you know it.
I go quiet. If I face the truth, as ugly as it is, she's right. I was ashamed of Garden Heights and everything in it. It seems stupid now, though. I can't change where I come from or what I've been through. So why should I be ashamed of what makes me me? That's like being ashamed of myself. Nah, fuck that. Maybe I was ashamed, I admit. But I'm not anymore. And Seven's not ashamed of you, your mama, or Lyric. He loves y'all, Kenya. So like I said, our brother, not just mine. Trust, I'm more than happy to share if it means getting him off my back. He can be a pain in the ass, can he?
Girl, yes.
We laugh together. As much as I've lost, I've gained some good stuff, too. Like Kenya.
Yeah, all right, she says. I guess we can share him.
Chop, chop, Star, Mama calls, clapping her hands as if that'll make me move faster. Still on her dictatorship, I swear.
We've got work to do, Kenya. I got a bag and some gloves with your name on them if you want to help out.
Kenya turns to me like, seriously?
I can share her, too, I say. Matter of fact, please take her.
We laugh and stand up. Kenya glances around at the rubble. More neighbors have joined in on cleaning up, and they form a line that moves trash out the store and into the trash cans on the curb.
So what y'all gonna do now? Kenya asks. With the store, I mean.
A car honks at us, and the driver yells out to let us know he has our back. The answer comes easily. We'll rebuild. Once upon a time, there was a hazel-eyed boy with dimples. I called him Khalil. The world called him a thug. He lived, but not nearly long enough. And for the rest of my life, I'll remember how he died. Fairy tale? No. But I'm not giving up on a better ending. It would be easy to quit if it was just about me, Khalil, that night, and that cop. It's about way more than that, though. It's about Seven, Sekani, Kenya, Devante. It's also about Oscar, Ayana, Trayvon, Rakia, Michael, Eric, Tamir, John, Ezel, Sandra, Freddie, Alton, Philando. It's even about that little boy in 1955, who nobody recognized at first. Emmett. The messed up part? There are so many more. Yet I think it'll change one day. How? I don't know. When? I definitely don't know. Why? Because there will always be someone ready to fight. Maybe it's my turn. Others are fighting, too. Even in the garden, where sometimes it feels like there's not a lot worth fighting for. People are realizing and shouting and marching and demanding. They're not forgetting. I think that's the most important part. Khalil, I'll never forget. I'll never give up. I'll never be quiet. I promise.
This is Bonnie Turpin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas, This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Ryan Burke. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2017 by Angie Thomas. Production copyright 2017 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.